Welcome to the Full Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy, recording at 2:31 p.m. That is Central Time. Today is November 18th. I thought I would kick off in Australia, where the financials index has pulled back rather sharply. And we're in the region of the peaks from back in 2015 and 16. And there's been a bit of a loss of momentum over the course of the last few months. So this is the biggest downward dynamic we've seen in a while. And it's now back testing the sequence of higher reaction lows. So it really would be ideal if the price can continue to hold this 6,500 point level, which pretty much coincides with the region of the trend mean, or at least it will do in the next week or two. Of course, the reason why the financials were weaker in here today is because the RBA governor basically said that he doesn't really want to raise interest rates and that they're willing to wait out inflation. And of course, that's another example of central banks just peeling back from the initial expectations that they were going to be pressured into raising rates. And in places like Australia and Canada and the USA and in the UK, well, there are all varying pressures that are coming to bear, but particularly in countries like Australia or the UK for that matter, where there are floating rate mortgages, then it's going to be a significant challenge to raise interest rates, particularly when property prices have raced ahead over the course of the last year. So they're going to be very cautious, and that's weighing on the financials. It's also weighing on the Australian dollar, and it's pulled back from the region of the trend mean, and it's testing the sequence of higher reaction lows. Now, we do have a short-term oversold condition as it comes back into an area of potential support, but it's going to need an upward dynamic in order to confirm that we're back in a demand-dominated environment. And the New Zealand dollar is also easing back from the upper side of its range and coming back to test the region of the trend mean and the sequence of higher reaction lows as well. So we're at, I think, what's likely to be a critical juncture for both of these currencies. The Japanese yen, and shown here with the dollar trending higher against it, it was off the highs yesterday, but a little bit steadier in here today. And the most important thing it's done has been to break this more than 5-year downtrend. So it's looking increasingly likely that the Japanese are going to be perhaps the last country in the world. Excuse me. Sorry about that. Going to be the last country in the world to raise interest rates. And then Europe doesn't look like they're going to be in a big hurry to raise rates either. But the euro is very oversold, and we saw a little bit of a steadier action in here today. And the defining characteristic of the downtrend over the last year has been the sequence of lower rally highs, and that's particularly been in evidence since May. So a sustained move realistically back above 117 would be required to question the consistency of this downtrend, and I think it's more likely than not that we're going to see a rebound, at least to unwind the short-term oversold condition. Now, when we think about what's going on in the wider market in here today, well, the NASDAQ was up, and it was up in a reasonably dynamic manner, and it was being and it's out to a new all-time high. It's been led higher by Nvidia. So Nvidia's earnings came through extremely strong, and there's still robust demand for graphics cards, and the share was up, not I think at one point nearly 10%, but certainly it was up in a dynamic manner. And then Amazon is also starting to firm. Now, one thing we saw in here today was that Alibaba pulled back extremely sharply because their earnings disappointed despite record sales. Of course, that was for the third quarter. But they had record sales for their Singles Day event on November 11th, and yet they're still predicting that their fourth quarter is going to undershoot as well. Whereas Amazon is looking increasingly likely that it's going to be able to sustain a breakout from this lengthy range, and this isn't the first time that it's had one of these lengthy ranges. And one of the defining characteristics here is that we saw a very similar pattern in the early part of 2020, where we had a failed upside break and then it pulled back sharply and then rebounded quickly and then had another leg higher. And then we had the failed upside break in June and it pulled back sharply and it's been regrouping since, and now it's pushing back above the $3,500 level. So it was touch and go there for a while, but it is starting to push up. And we're seeing an increasing number of these mega cap companies starting to rebound. And a good part of the reason for that is investors are beginning to come around to the conclusion that central banks are going to be inhibited from raising interest rates. And 10-year yields continue to hover here around the 1.6% level. So we still have inflationary pressures, and particularly used car prices have been extraordinarily strong. And then we also have the coronavirus regrouping and spreading again in Europe. Now, that might be because they've been less aggressive in vaccinations. It might be because of the cold weather. It might be also because the vaccines are losing their efficacy. It also suggests that if that is indeed the case, and that the countries that have been more aggressive in producing or in, I guess, encouraging people to take a third dose of the vaccine, well, they've been coming through in a somewhat better manner. So it does suggest that companies like Pfizer are going to see ongoing revenue streams. And the company did well by getting first to market. They did well then by getting pills for their vaccine permissioned. And the whole race to get solutions for the coronavirus is being treated as a winner-takes-all environment. The continued success of the stay-at-home success stories, like Amazon and like Apple, or Nvidia for that matter, well, that's also contributing to the continued performance of the large caps, but it's also suggesting that there isn't going to be a rush to raise interest rates, and that we may see additional lockdown measures introduced before long. Now, when we look at the biotech sector, it's not performing particularly well, and Pfizer is not a constituent of it. And despite the fact that AstraZeneca is coming through with robust data for its antibody solution, the share is pulling back. Regeneron, which also produces antibody solutions, is doing the opposite and pushing higher. Moderna, which was one of the bigger constituents of the index, is going down and has had a substantial decline. So when we then think about what's going on here, the only conclusion is that this extreme dispersion in results between companies all doing reasonably similar products, well, that suggests that investors are willing to just throw money from one to the other as the outlook improves or disimproves. It makes investing via an ETF extremely difficult, and it means that some of the more promising stories coming out of the biotech sector are probably going to languish until all of this starts to be ironed out. With Europe, and of course the euro has been weak, so that has helped to support the stock market. Well, with the euro steadying, then it's likely that the short-term overbought conditions will be unwound. But it's also helping, it's helping to support these stay-at-home companies. But Bitcoin has been weak. And I continue to look at the 57,000 level, and it got right down and tested it and briefly went below it today, but then closed above it, or is likely at least to close above it now. We're right at the lower side of the range. We've had the failed upside break, we had the downside key reversal, we're now right at the lower side of the range. Now, if we see an additional decline from this level, well, then that's going to increase the potential that it's going to come all the way back down and at least test 50,000. If it fails there, it'll go down and test 30,000. So we've had one failed upside break. If we get a medium-term failed upside break, then that's going to be a major, major trend inconsistency. And right now, Bitcoin's holding the 50 basis, excuse me, the 50-day moving average, and Ethereum is testing the upper side of the underlying range and also the 50-day moving average. So this is also a key area of potential support. Now we're seeing a great deal of enthusiasm spreading throughout the cryptocurrency world, and NFTs are in a very, very manic environment where people are racing to try and put money into these non-fungible tokens and get a fractional ownership model moving in something. So there's a race on to gather money right now for an attempt to buy a physical copy of the US Constitution. And it's got a reserve at Sotheby's of about 20 million. And considering the size of the community, the realization that this historic piece or document is up for sale, it's quite likely that it is going to go for a multiple of the reserve, and that we're going to be setting new values. And this is what's been going on for a year, that art pieces are setting new values because we see that there's this incredible supply of money and that financial conditions remain extremely accommodative. And the cryptocurrencies, the main ones at least, are not attracting as much interest because money is flowing to the more speculative portion of the market. And we are absolutely out there on the fringe right now, where there is a large quantity of money floating around looking for opportunities in NFTs and working very adroitly to try and create fractional ownership of physical commodities. Now, the big question is if that's successful and that can be achieved with a notable physical item. There's absolutely no reason that fractional ownership can't be then spread out to every physical asset. And of course, the more popular and known the asset is, the greater the potential there is for a secondary market in fractional ownership of it. But of course, it also means that we're going to start to see investment in property on a fraction, on a fractional ownership basis. And that means that historic landmarks will become potentially subject to fractional ownership, or that new buildings, and it's quite likely that the tallest building in the world will be started at some point in the next decade, and that it will be funded via fractional ownership. And that, I think, is a rather interesting iteration of derivative plays, but also it's a, I think, a logical iteration or the next iteration of securitization. And we've had a big bubble evolve from securitization in the past, and it's looking likely that we'll have a big bubble that eventually crescendos in fractional ownership, because it's effectively securitizing an asset. Of course, in the past, it was securitizing cash flows. But we're in a very low interest rate environment where the availability of cash flows is rather difficult to come by, and therefore you need to get your capital appreciation. So then, if you fractionally break up a piece of capital, well, then that is free to trade. And it is, I think, very similar to the kinds of, or the way at least, in which cash flows are separated from principal in the Treasury strips market. So when we think about how this is going to evolve, well, I think it is likely that this is going to continue regardless of what happens to prices, because we're at a very critical juncture here for the cryptocurrencies. Now, meanwhile, if central banks are inhibited from raising rates, well, then that is against a background of very liquid financial conditions, then the purchasing power of currencies will be devalued, and gold is a hard asset. Now, we had a downside Q reversal 3 days ago, and subsequently it has not followed through on the downside, and the size of the dynamics is smaller than what we had at peaks in January and in June. So if all this is a mild consolidation above the range that formed between about the end of June and the beginning of November, then that looks very bullish indeed. And if we see gold pushing through to new recovery highs, well, then I think it's going to be a lot harder for the bears to argue that this is a developing top formation. It has looked like a consolidation for most of the last year, and I don't think anything has really happened to question that hypothesis. Ultimately, gold will continue to outperform as long as investors are worried about the intentions of government. And governments, they really haven't got anything to induce confidence, considering that most of them have absolutely no interest in balancing their budgets. So if gold is consolidating, then silver is likely to act as a high beta play on gold. When it starts moving, silver is likely to move faster, and it has also broken a sequence of lower rally highs in here. And then, of course, the gold shares will begin to attract attention if gold breaks on the upside, and they've also broken a sequence of lower rally highs. The big cost consideration for those gold miners is oil. And oil prices continue to hold the $80 area, and they were in positive territory in here today. So the range still continues to hold. I do think that it is going to be more difficult to sustain significant advances beyond current levels for oil prices, because the higher the price goes, the greater the incentive there will be to increase drilling activity. One thing, of course, and it is an awfully big question, and it's rather difficult to know the answer, is what's going to happen with China? Copper prices were down heavily yesterday. They rebounded from the region of the trend mean in here today, and it's been a range overall for the last 6 months. And as long as that remains the case, then we can give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. But copper is the big secular bull market use case scenario because of new sources of demand. Whereas the big argument for a new bull market in the early 2000s was iron ore, because China was industrializing at an incredibly rapid pace. Well, iron ore prices now are less than half of where they were back in June. They've completely unwound the pandemic surge, and Chinese growth is moderating. Now, we have backwardations right across the board in the industrial metal sector, but not in iron ore. And coal prices are also starting to come back down. And China is dealing with slower growth. And then we had the Again, we had that big pullback in Alibaba in here today because of growth. So that was an awfully big surprise on the downside. And the price is still holding the low from early October. And slower economic growth in China does mean that there will be more money made available to the property sector. Now, we're probably well beyond the go-go years, but then will the Chinese consumer be encouraged to participate? And there's a lot of money tied up in property, and property prices have been soft. So that is weighing on consumer sentiment. Then you have this whole laying down movement where people don't want to participate in the rat race. And if that persists, and arguably it's mostly the millennial generation or China's version of the millennial generation are engaging in this practice. But of course, those are likely to be the people that inherit the most, because in a single child environment, there are four grandparents. There are four grandparents, two parents, one child, and the eldest of those children are the group that are lying down. They're those that have the greatest financial wherewithal, and if they're not spending, then that points towards a deflationary environment in China, which would necessitate more spending and lower interest rates. And then the big question is, when are we going to get that from China? Because when they do start to spend, then it will be a big catalyst for additional upside. But my feeling, at least, is that the inflation that we've seen over the last year is going to moderate next year, that the semiconductor shortage is already peaking, and that's going to contribute to better inflation, or better inflationary forces. It's also going to delay the decision from central banks to raise interest rates. We're still going to see that food prices continue to march higher, and lumber prices have also bottomed and were limit up yesterday and limit up again in here today. So that's beginning to suggest that we're moving into a more volatile environment in terms of commodities, and that inflation isn't just going away, but rather that we're transitioning here from the short-term inflationary pressures to more medium-term inflationary pressures. And of course, central banks, they're not going to be ahead of the curve in managing that transition. So it's quite likely that we're going to continue to see low interest rates. And as long as the Nasdaq, in particular, is trending higher in a consistent manner, well, we can give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. And I think with that, I'll leave it for today. I'll wish all the best to all of you.